Alright, we'll say good morning. Alright, we'll say today's daf is Pei Zayin. Today's daf is Pei Vav. We're going to pick up on the last two lines of Pei He Amud Beis. Actually, let's pick up a little bit earlier. Let's pick up Ella Amra Puna Bari Dravish. I know you did this yesterday, but it's 2, 4, 6 lines up from the bottom, just so we pick up at a good starting point. So remember again, we're trying to figure out the Mishnah's case is where a woman took a neder that her husband should not get any benefits from her maasei yadayim, from her earnings. So remember again, we had a three-way machlokas as to the nature of that neder in the Mishnah. So the first opinion, the Mishnah Tanakama felt that such a neder is ineffective because she can't make a neder to undermine a right or an obligation that ultimately, again, that a pre-existing obligation or a pre-existing lien that the husband has against her earnings. Rabbi Akiva in the Mishnah said that Lamaisa, the neder only devolves upon Hadafa, additional amounts that she earns. And Rabbi Yochanan ben Uri felt that although now there is no need to annul the neder, but should he divorce her, the neder would take effect. And therefore, Lamaisa, again, in the event that he divorced her, then wants to remarry her, he should annul the neder now. Because if he doesn't do so, then when he divorces her, so the neder will take effect, and then ultimately he can remarry her, but he'll be prohibited from going ahead and benefiting from her earnings. So the Gemara's problem was, well, how could a woman go ahead and ultimately, how could she go ahead and make a neder about something that's a davar shel abal olam? It hasn't yet come into existence. So let's pick up. What's the case? The case is where she says, let my hands essentially become hektish. So she's not going ahead and really making a neder about the earnings, because it's really the earnings are a davar shel abal olam, they have not yet come into existence. But what is she making a neder about? She's making a neder about her hands. And therefore, again, the adayim ha isnuhu ba'olam, because her hands ultimately do exist. They are a davar sheba li'olam, and therefore, lemaisa, again, you can make a neder regarding them. But 1 second, is that true? If she made a neder like this, would the hands become kodesh? But again, remember, there's still the same issue. Even if you want to say that she's not being mekadesh, that she's not making a neder regarding her earnings, but she's making a neder regarding her hands, the hands themselves, ultimately, the husband has a sheep, but he has, so to speak, a lien against those hands. To which the Yerah says, the Amr Lichima Garsha. Oh, what's the case? The case over here is where she says that I'm making a neder now, that my hands should become Kodesh, so to speak. Well, see, understand, when she says that, what she's really doing is, she's being Mekadesh, that which her hands create, or that which her hands generate, but instead of having the neder devolve upon something that is not yet in existence, the neder devolves upon her hands, which are in existence. To which the Yerah says, but still, how does that neder undermine the husband's right? To which the Gemara says, you're right, she's not making a neder about now. Rather, what she's saying is that anything my hands generate should become Kodesh when? After I get divorced. To which the Gemara says, I don't understand. Hashta mihas lo megarsha. But she's not divorced now. She's not divorced now. To which, look at the last run on the page. Hashta mihas lo megarsha. To which the Gemara says, "Kilomar tirtzas tiratzta lemandamar adamaktish davar shel abal olam de b'haylishna de kamar liad lididei vaday mehani avalamanda amar adamaktish davar shel abal olam afilu amra hachi hechi mehani." So we'll say. So now the Gemara wants to suggest. Remember, we're trying to avoid the adamaktish davar shel abal olam issue. So now a woman's being maktish something that is in existence, i.e., her hands. She's not actually making it hektish now, therefore it doesn't undermine the husband's right. Rather, she's making a neder that if I get divorced, anything my hands generate should become kodesh. To which the Gemara says, "Umimaytechi amra hachi mahanyo." Is that true that that works? Meaning, is that even true that such a statement like that works? Type of peivav. Amar Rabbi Ila. Uma ilu amar lechaveiro sade zu shani mocher lecha l'she'ekachena mimcha takdish milo kacha. Also, listen to this. Rabbi Ila said, if a person says to his friend, this field that I am going to sell to you when I purchase it back from you, it should become Kodesh. So we'll say again, remember, so now I'm saying to Reuven, I'm going to sell you a field. I'm going to sell you a field, and I'm going to buy it back from you. And when I buy it back from you, it should be Kodesh. So the Gemara, so we'll say, because remember, what the Gemara is asking on is like this. According to the way we're setting up the case now, Oman is making the following nether. My hands, anything that my hands generate, should become Hekdesh when we get divorced. She wants to make a nether now regarding circumstances that apply to a different state. So right now she's in a state of being married. She wants to make a nether now that's going to impact her when she is divorced. So the Gemara is asking, can you do that? Can you make a nether? Can you make a nether that will only come into effect when your circumstances change, when you change into an, when you morph into another state? So the Gemara says, why not? Let's say in this case over here, I say to my friend, I'm about to sell you a field. This field that I'm about to sell to you, when I buy it back from you, it should be Hekdesh. So the Gemara says, Milo Kacha, does this not work? Does this not work? I will say, take a look at Rashi for just a moment. Right? Take a look at Rashi. He says, Milo Kacha, Milo Chayel Shem Kedusha La, L'sheyikachena Mizeh, Hachanami Gabi Hai Isisa, Ki Omro Yikachu Yodai La'osehen La'achar Shetiskarish, Devade Chayla Alay Shem Kedusha. So again, the Gemara says, just like this case over here, Rabbi Ila, where it works, if I say, when I sell this field to you, I'm going to buy it back, and when I buy it back, you should be Hekdish. Just like it works there, so to the case of the woman should work as well, because it also, the common denominator would appear between the two cases is what? You're making a neder that is only going to take effect when a latter state occurs. And yet we see it works by the land, it should work by your Masi Adayim as well. Mask if the Rabbi Yirmiya, that's Rabbi Yirmiya raises a question. Me, Dami, how can you compare those cases? Sode zu, sha'ani mocha lecha, hashta biadehi. Let's say, here's the difference. What's the case of the field? Who has the field right now? I have the field. So what I'm saying now is, Reuven, I'm going to sell you the field, and when I buy it back from you, it's going to become Hekdesh. So the reason I could even make a tenai like that is why? Because I am the current owner of the field right now. It's in my possession. However, again, Isha biadala hakdish masiyadal. But does a woman have the ability to go to be makdish or masiyadal? Does she have the ability to consecrate her earnings? No. Why? Because they're not in her domain. Ultimately, it's owned by the husband. Halo dami, so rather you have to say that the case of the Ma'asei Adayim is comparable to the following case. Eloli Omer Lachavero, listen to this, where I say to my friend, Sod Zushamacharti Lacha. So we'll say, oh, this case is a little bit more comparable. I say to Reuven, you know that field that I already sold you, right? It's Tuesday today, I sold it to you on Sunday. L'she'ekachena mimcha takdish. When I buy it back from you, it should be Kodesh. The Gemara says, but one second. Mi kacha, does that work? That doesn't work, right? Meaning, again, that case of Hekdesh actually does not work at all. Maskif, so Gemara says, so we'll say, therefore, again, we still haven't found the comparable case. So Maskif, Rav Papa says, well, how can you compare the case? Mi dami, gabi zvina, psika milsayu, gabi isha, mi psika milsa. So we'll say, here's the fundamental difference as well. So says Rav Papa, when it comes to a sale, so the matter is absolute. We'll define what that means in just a moment. But when it comes to a woman, is the matter absolute? So what does that mean? Take a look at the Rosh, Rabosai. You see the Rosh on the right-hand side in the margin? Gabi milsa psika milsayu, she'ein lo ba lo guf velo peros. So we'll say, when you go ahead and you sell a piece of land, so what level of ownership interest do you retain in that land once you sell it?
Zero.
None. I mean, obviously you could structure a sale differently, but lamais, again, you're not retaining anything in the principal, you're not retaining anything in the produce. On the other hand, look at the Rosh again. Gabi isha mi psika milsa hagufu shala ela shemeshubet laba masiyah dehochach yichol lakdisha. So we'll say, see, here's the interesting part. By a woman's masiyah daim, does a husband own her hands? Of course not. The woman owns her own hands. What does the husband own? Or actually not even own. He has an entitlement to what she produces. So what the Gemara is suggesting is the following. Remember again, in the case of where I say to Reuven, you know the field I sold you on Sunday, when I buy it back from you, it's going to become Hekdesh. So what's the halacha? That does not work. Right? That Tanai does not work. Why doesn't it work? Because absolutely no ownership interest presently in that land. If I have no ownership interest in the land, I can't legislate regarding the status of the land. On the other hand, in the case of the woman, perhaps if she makes a neder saying that when I get divorced, anything my hands generate should be hekdish, so perhaps that neder should work. Why? Why? Oh, because she has not just an ownership interest, but what? She has ownership over her hands. And therefore, lemaisa, maybe the neder should work. To which the Gemara says, halo dami ela laomer. So therefore, again, Abose, we're still trying to figure out if this case works or not. Halo dami ela laomer lechavero. So rather, if you're going to compare the case of the woman's hands, or the case of the neder, that the earnings should become hektish after divorce, if you're going to compare it to anything, you should compare it to the following case. Ela laomer lechavero. Sade zu shemacharti lecha, this field that I sold to you, excuse me, sade zu shemashkanti lecha, I'm sorry. And they will say, in this case, we're not talking about sale, rather we're talking about a mashkon. So I say to Reuven, you know that field that I gave you as collateral? So let's say I borrowed $1,000 from Reuven, I gave him a field as collateral. So I say to him, l'chisha efdena mimcha, when I redeem that collateral from you, how do you redeem collateral? Pay the debt, right? When I pay the debt and I redeem the collateral, takdish, then ultimately again, the collateral should become kodesh, should become sanctified. Milo kacha. So does such a case not work? In other words, we'll say, that works. That works. Now we'll say, now, why does that case work? Right? Oh, because remember, when it comes to collateral, I, meaning the owner of the collateral, still have ownership rights. We'll see, when we get to the Babas, there's fascinating discussions about what a lender's rights in collateral is. Is a lender permitted to use collateral or not? So generally we paskin that a lender is not permitted to use collateral. Again, unless of course he has a specific agreement with, bless you, with the borrower. So the maisa, again, in this case over here, this seems to be a little bit more comparable to the case of the maasei daima of the isha. So I borrowed $1,000 from Reuven, I gave him the collateral, I say to him, when I redeem my collateral by repaying you the debt, the collateral is going to become kodesh. And that works. That statement actually works. Oh, this seems to be very comparable, bless you, very comparable to the case of the woman. Why? Because just like I have an ownership interest in the collateral, it's mine. It really is. Well, it's not just an ownership interest. Collateral belongs to the borrower up until the point that he cannot pay the debt, in which the lender is permitted to seize the collateral as a form of payment. But until that point in time, the collateral is absolutely the property of the borrower. So too, again, the isha, although the husband has a quote-unquote lien against the earnings of her hand is hers. Therefore, the same way I can make it tonight, regarding the collateral that is in the possession of the lender, a woman should be able to make a tanai regarding her masi adayim in the event that she gets divorced. To which the Gemara says, maski of the Rav Shisha Breid Ravidi, mi dami. How can you go ahead and compare those cases? And I'll tell you why. Meaning those cases being the case of the collateral to the case of the woman's hands. Mi dami. Sada biado liftoso. So we'll say, here's the difference. My field, I have the ability to redeem it whenever I want. Now, what does that mean? If you take a look at Rashi, so call imas the boy ahachi matzi lakdusha mehashta. So I will say, listen to this. Meaning, whenever I want to go ahead and redeem, what does that mean? If I pay off the debt, then what happens? I get back my collateral. So, meaning that collateral is mine for the taking whenever I can or whenever I want. Isha biadol lehiskarish. I will say, how does a woman quote unquote redeem her hands? Only through divorce or through the death of her husband. Neither of those processes are at her whim or will, right? And hopefully not. I guess one of them might be. But the idea over here is she doesn't have the ability to initiate the gerushin process, and therefore, again, I will say the cases are not comparable. See here the difference. Maybe the reason why I can go ahead and be makdish my mashkon, I can make a tanai now that my mashkon, my collateral should become kodesh at the time that I redeem it, is because I control that process. Because I control the process, couple that with the fact that I have an ownership interest, allows me to make a tanai for a future occurrence. On the other hand, the woman with her hands, ultimately, again, yes, in the event of death or divorce, she will get full rights back over that, but she does not control the ability to trigger that process. Halo damya ela laomer lecha.
She can give up the mizonos, though.
I'm sorry?
She can give up the mizonos, and then she doesn't owe him that money.
she can give up the mezonos. correct.
So in that sense, it's just like the collateral. She's getting something, and that's why she has to do the Shabbat day.
Correct. Except remember, that is not totally true either. That's partially true. Remember, the Mishnah Ksuvos brings down that a woman is obligated to do certain things for the household independent of mezonos. Right? There are certain responsibilities she has to the household in general. Even if she chooses not to take mezonos, those responsibilities are on her. So the husband will always have some level of entitlement to some ma'aseh adayim. Correct. It'll change depending on what she's getting in return, but there's always something. The Gemara's offering is always something. So the Gemara goes weiter. So rather, this case, meaning the case of the Isha, is only comparable to the following situation, where a man says to his friend, what's this case over here? Where I say to Reuven, you know that piece of that property that I gave to you as that field that I gave to you as collateral for 10 years. So you both say you can do something like this, where you could have a collateralized, you could have a collateral situation where the borrower agrees to allow the collateral to remain with the lender for a certain amount of time. These would generally be cases where it could be part of the payment for the loan was also coming from payros, right? Or whatever the case may be. The point is, you have over here a stipulated amount of time. I think you have loans like this also, right? There aren't there mortgages like this where you can't pay it off early. Right. So, you know, so essentially what you have over here is there's like a 10-year period. So I can't redeem the collateral for 10 years. So listen to this. So the Gemara wants to say, oh, maybe this is like the case. Maybe this is like the case of the Isha. In this case over here, where I say to Reuven, listen, that field that is collateralized to you for 10 years, when I redeem it from you, it should be hagdish. Now this sounds comparable to the case of the woman. Why is it compared? What's the halmina that it's comparable? Because now, for the next 10 years, I can't do anything about it. Kind of just like the Isha, who can't do anything about her circumstances either. To which the Gemara says, no, maski v'ravashi mi dami. Still not comparable. Hasam kayitz. Isha, it's like he's doing something. It's still not comparable. Why, Abosai? Because this case still has a finite duration. Okay, it's a long time. It's a decade. But it's still a finite duration. There's an end time to ultimately the lender's entitlement to the property. Therefore, the borrower will get it back. Therefore, it makes sense to say that he could stipulate regarding a future occurrence. But in the case of an Isha, does she ever know if and when her marriage is going to end? Amud Beis, Ella, Amud Avashi, Shainikam. So we'll say, therefore, again, we're kind of back to square one. And what we're trying to figure out a circumstance in which a woman would have the ability to be makdish her ma'aseh yadayim. That's what we're trying to figure out. How could a woman ever go ahead and make a neder, making her earnings usser, if that by definition contradicts and undermines the husband's right to it? So we tried to compare it to a whole bunch of other cases. All the comparisons somehow fell short. To which the Gemara finally says, I'm going to give you the answer. Ela Amar Rashi, shiny konam. So the truth is, a konam neder, remember, we spoke about earlier in the Masechta, is a type of neder which employs hekdish, which compares, again, an item to hekdish. So when you make a konam, konamas have their own set of halachas. What does that mean? Dechi kedushas hagufta. I mean, listen to this. Because they both say, when you make something konam, or when you declare a konam state upon something, it's as if you convey it with kedushas haguf, with actual physical sanctity. Remember, again, we learned before that lemaisa, again, there are two different types of kedusha. There's what's called kedushas damim and kedushas haguf. Kedushas damim means financial sanctity. Kedushas haguf means physical sanctity. So, for example, if I go ahead and I say I'm giving this home to the Beis Hamikdash, so the Beis Hamikdash doesn't need this. So, what does that usually mean if you're giving an object? What it means is I'm agreeing to give the value of the object. So I sell it off and I donate the value to the Beis Hamikdash. On the other hand, let's say again, if I say I have a sheep and I'm saying giving my sheep to the Beis Hamikdash. So again, it will depend on what my intent is, but technically speaking, what that could refer to as kedushas haguf. Literally, I'm going to give the actual animal itself. So the Gemara suggests over here that when a person makes a konam has the status of kedushas haguf. Literally, again, that you're physically sanctifying the item which you are making the neder regarding. So we'll say, so what does that mean? Take a look at the Rush for just a moment over here. The Rush says, "Shiny." It's in the left-hand margin. Shiny konamos the kedushas haguf dami. The same way that something that has physical sanctity does not have redemption. Kach konamos ein lahem pidyon. So to konam does not have pidyon. Vahatiron lemisha ne'asru alav. To permit it to someone to whom it was prohibited. Delo olim isurayhu litpos pidyonam. Kevan shalo ne'asar kimal adam echan. Now, what does this mean? So look, finish on in the Gemara. The Gemara says, kidirava. So I'm sorry, let me read that once more. Elam Ravashi. Rav Rashi says, shiny konamos. A konam vow is different. Because a konam vow almost creates like a kedusha sagov, a physical sanctity. Ukidrava. The Amar Rava, what did Rava say? Hekdish chametz v'shichrer mafkien midei shibud. But I said, listen to this. Because Rava said, hekdish, chametz and shichrer, go ahead and remove any type of liens. Now what does this mean in a practical sense? So we'll say, so what's the case of Hekdish? So remember, we actually had these cases. If you look at the Ran for just a moment, so look at the Ran says, Da'amar Rava Hekdish, kigon asa shoro apotiki lebal chovo. So say, let's say I made my oxen apotiki. What's apotiki? We learned this earlier. Apotiki means I designate the ox as the source of repayment. Apotiki is a contraction for potehe koi. From here, you shall take your payment. So again, I borrow $1,000 from Reuven. I say, Reuven, here, this ox, this is where you're going to get your payments from. And then what do? I make the ox hekdish. I give it to Beis HaMikdash. So what's the halacha? The fact that I've made it hekdish goes ahead and removes the lien that Reuven has against it. Now, of course, the novelty in that is what? The novelty is that even though Reuven's lien pre-existed, so to speak, the Beis HaMikdash lien, nevertheless, hekdish, the point is hekdish overturns all pre-existing liens. That's the case of hekdish. So I take an animal that was set aside to go ahead and repay a debt. I make it hekdish. The fact that I make it hekdish removes the lien. Chametz. What's the case of chametz? Look down in the Ran a little bit. Chametz. Yisol she'aso chemtza po tekila obed kochavim. Va'avar alav ha'pesach. Yisol chametz mafkiya shibul obed kochav va'asir ba'ana. But I'll say, listen to this. Let's say I go ahead and I borrow $1,000 from Reuven. Or actually, this is better if it's not Reuven. This is better if it's Joe the Gentile. So I borrow from Joe the Gentile. What happens? And I go ahead and I say I'm going to pay him back from, I have a 250-year-old bottle of scotch, which is chametz. It's good stuff. Right? Which is chametz. So what happens? I say to him, here, I'm going to pay you back from this. Pesach comes. Because Pesach comes and I'm not allowed to own chametz. So what happens? So my ownership interest is removed from that chametz. Once my ownership interest is removed from the chametz, so Joe the Gentile's lien is removed from it as well. So you see that chametz also removes the lien. The last one, obviously these are all more involved cases, shichrer. The case of shichrer, Rav Osai, is, if you look at, again, the Ran again, asa abdu apotiki v'shichrero lova mishuchram avago v'chom mokom acher. If I go ahead and I borrow money from Reuven, and I say to Reuven, I'm going to pay you, with an eved. I have an eved kenani, I have a non-Jewish servant that I'm going to give you in payments for the debt. And then what happens? I emancipate the eved. So once I emancipate him, all liens against him ultimately are lifted. So we'll say Rava's point is that there are certain things, certain profound, or I should say almost like cathartic changes of state, ultimately go ahead and remove all types of liens. He gives three examples. Hekdish, chametz, shichrer. For our purposes, we don't really care so much about chametz and shichrer today. Let's see. What matters for us today is what? Is hekdish. Therefore, the Gemara is suggesting over here that lemaisa, when the woman says, konam peros yadai, when she says, the earnings of my hands should be konam. So essentially, when she makes that type of neder, essentially making her earnings hekdish, that type of neder actually has the ability to what? To actually undermine the husband's actual lien. So according to this answer, what the Gemara is suggesting, you see, we set up the case before us saying that she's making a tanai that'll only take effect once she gets divorced. Based on what the Gemara says over here, it appears that her tanai could even work when even when they're married. Because the power of Hekdish, the power of Konam, it has the ability to undermine any presently existing lien. So the Gemara goes weiter. So the Gemara, I'm sorry, Zamar Rav, Hekdish Chomis HaShichar, Mafkin Midei Shibut, Ihachi Lamali Shema Yigashena. So Moshe says the Gemara, I don't understand. So now, if that's the case that you're telling me, that when she makes her earning Hekdish, it literally has the ability to override the husband's lien, so why do you have to set it up as a case of where she's saying that the Tanai should only be valid when she gets divorced? To which the Gemara says, you're right, Tani, va'od shema yigashena. To which the Gemara says, you're right. The truth is, you don't have to set it up that way. And in reality, the way you should read it is how. And also, furthermore, maybe he will divorce her. So the idea over here, the Gemara is saying, take a look at the Ran for just one moment. So the Ran says, Va'od shema yigashena kamar, mehashta nami kaddish, dekona mafkia shibude debal. In reality, according to what the Gemara just said, is that Lamaisa, when she makes this konam vow, it has the ability to undermine and uproot the husband's lien against her earnings now. Uchesh tinsa lomar, the almuha rabbanon l'shibude debal, ba'od ha'tachtov, deshavyo kelkech gamar, v'lo kemalva, afiluhachi yafer, shema yigarshenu. So I'll say, so listen to this. V'ahenu dehasen perek, afal pi perek almuha. So the Gemara says that inachinami. This is actually interesting because this is different than anything we've learned up until now. Which is up until now, we were always assuming that nothing a woman says could ever undermine her husband's rights to her earnings. Now we see it's not true. That in fact, if she makes a konam vow regarding her earnings, that lemaisa, because she's making her earnings hektish is the one thing that can absolutely override the husband's rights, because hektish overrides everything. Therefore, the mindset, if she says konam, if she literally says konam, my earnings now, that neder, which employs hektish, ultimately overrides the husband's rights. If that's the case, says the Gemara, so why do you have to write that she's making the tanai for when she gets divorced? To which the Gemara says, you're right, Tani, va'od shema yigashena. Furthermore, he may come to divorce. And I look at Rashi actually just for one moment. Ihach ilam li shema yigashena, demok mislamas nisin shema yigashena, afilo lo ratza legarsha, lekadsha mehashta, o mishani amur rabbana l'shibuda debal, de lo asi hektish umafka l'shibuda minei. To which the Gemara says, you're right, the Gemara says, because lemaisa, what we have over here is the following tension. What we have over here is that according to the purest letter of the law, so when a woman makes her neder, when a woman makes her earnings hektish, so the maisa again, that should be even strong enough to override the husband's rights. Chazal, however, went ahead and allowed the husband's rights to remain intact. But even if you hold that the husband's rights are so strong in the eyes of Chazal that even a konam vow should not override them, the husband should still be made for the neder. Why? Because even if the neder doesn't take effect now, he may come to what? He may come to divorce her. And everyone agrees that what? That if he does divorce her, then what will occur? The neder will in fact come into effect. And if the neder comes into effect, then that would ruin his chances for remarriage. So we'll say two different sides of the coin. Either, again, there is the possibility that in fact this type of vow works even in the context of marriage. That is a possibility because hektish is so strong that it can even override the husband's rights. Or possibility two is that even the event that the neder does not work during marriage, everyone agrees that unequivocally it does work when? In the aftermath of marriage. Therefore, if he ends up divorcing her, the neder does kick in. If that happens, that will preclude him from ultimately remarrying her because her maaseh then will be asur to him. Says the Mishnah. Nadra ishto. Well, so now we come to a very interesting case here. So nadra ishto v'savash nadra bito. So what's the case here? A woman makes a neder. Now, his wife made a neder, but he thought it was his daughter. Now, what's the case over here? Take a look at the Ran. So the Ran says, Nadra ishto v'savar shenadra bito. Okay. Fine. So look at the Ran. So the Ran says, Nadra ishto v'savar shenadra bito. Sha'amru lo shebito nadra umitoch ka hafer akai. So we'll say the case over here is that the man is not present. So in reality, his wife made an eder. But when someone told him what happened, they told the story wrong, and they said, oh, your daughter made a neder. So what did he do? He annulled the neder. Only one problem, which is what? wrong person. Or similarly, Nadra Bita Vesav Shenadra Ishto, or vice versa. His daughter made the neder, but when somebody, remember I'll say, a man does not have to hear the neder itself in order to annul it. He just has to have knowledge of the neder.
Why do you need both sides?
I'm sorry? Oh, so the Gemara is going to ask why you need both cases. Baruch Shekivanto. So, okay, so, or second case, we'll say, which is just the flip of the first. Nadra Bito, his daughter made the neder, or he heard his daughter made the neder, excuse me, his daughter did make the neder, Visavar Shenadra Ishto, but then he was told that it was his wife who made the neder, and he annulled his wife's neder, or Nadra Benazir. So we'll say, so in part one of the Mishnah, so he made a mistake as to who actually made the neder. So we'll say, first of all, fact number one we learn from the Mishnah is, a husband or a father need not hear the neder actually being made in order to annul it. If they have first-hand knowledge about the neder, or even second-hand knowledge about the neder, then lemaisa, again, that's enough for annulment. So case number one is he made a mistake as to who actually was making the neder. Case number two, nadra b'nazir v'savish nadra b'karban. So I'll say, if he heard, let's say in case number two, he's got the right person, but what? Wrong neder. So his wife made a neder that she's going to be a nazir, but he heard that she made a neder that she's going to bring a karban, and he annulled the neder. Or nadra b'karban b'savish nadra b'nazir. Or she made a neder that she's going to bring a karban, but he heard that she made a neder that she's going to become a nazir. Or nadra mita'ena b'savish nadra b'na'anovim. Or she made a neder not to eat figs, but it turns out that he heard that she made a neder not to eat grapes, and he annulled it. Or nadra min ha'anovim. Or she made a neder not to eat grapes, but he heard that she made a neder not to eat figs, and he annulled it. Both in all of these cases, hare ze yachzor v'yafer. In all of these cases, what does the halacha rabbo say? He has to go back and annul the neder again. Now, either because again he got the wrong party, or because he got the wrong neder, the wrong information. Take a look at the Ran for just a moment. Hare ze yachzor v'yafer. Dahakama ohafara kamaisa, because the initial, either if he upheld it or he annulled it, kevan debetos havi lomahani, it was mistaken, right? There was a mistaken either hakama or hafara, because Ginabosa, either he was mistaken about the identity of the vower, or he was mistaken about the subject matter of the actual vow itself. So what the Mishnah teaches me is that if I'm mistaken about any part of the neder, either about the identity of the vower or the subject matter of the vow, again, I have to go back and revoke the vow or uphold the vow again. Now remember, the chiddush over here is the following. That the day in which I hear about the corrected neder is considered to be Yom Shamo. Let's play this out. Let's say I hear on Sunday that my wife made a vow to be a nazir, and I annul it. And then what happens? I see her on Tuesday, and she told me, I didn't make a vow to be a nazir. First of all, it was our daughter who made a vow not to eat grapes, right? Whatever. So the ma'isa, again, I am permitted to go ahead and annul the vow on that day. Actually, I'll give you a better case. Then she says to me on Tuesday, no, I didn't make a neder not to be a nazir. I made a neder not to eat grapes. So I'm permitted to annul that vow on that day. And remember, again, the clock for the annulment starts when? When I hear the corrected information, right? So I have a calendrical day, meaning until sunset, of the day that I hear, to go ahead and annul or to uphold the neder that day. So I know it goes without saying, but just to clarify that point. So let's see the Gemara. Lameimra, Dianio sa dafku. So we're supposed to listen to this. So the Gemara says, you see from here, that when the Pasuk says, Kiheini avia osa, talking about the father's or the husband's ability, yani literally means restrain, which talks about the father or the husband's ability to annul the neder. So you see that when it says osa, that the father has the ability to restrain her from making the neder, husband has the ability to restrain his wife from making the neder, it means the power of revocation. So you see that osa, her, means dafka what? Her. You have to know the identity of the vower. So the Gemara says, is that true type of peizayin? So it's not just enough to know the subject matter of the neder, you have to know explicitly who it is that is making the neder in order to properly annul. The type of peizayin, I, v'ha gabe karayim. When it comes to kriya, This is talking about a case of where a person is tearing kriya because they lost a relative. Dichsiv al, it says on, what does that mean? Dichsiv al shaol va'al Yohona son bino. Suppose that the passage says vaikonin David asakina azos al shaol va'al Yohona son bino. V'tanya. So we'll say, listen to this. So the idea over here is, what the Gemara is quoting from this pasuk in Shmuel Beis, is that David HaMelech tore kriya on Shaul and on Yonasan. So what do you see from here? You see from here that kriya should be done specifically for who? For a specific loss. For a specific loss. And yet we learned, the Tanya, Amru lo meis ave v'kara v'kara. If they told a person, your father died, and he tore kriya, v'achakach nimsa b'no. And then it turned out that unfortunately it wasn't his father who passed away, but rather what? It was his son. So technically speaking, he tore kriya with the wrong person in mind. Nevertheless, the halacha is yotzi yedei kriya. Your yotzi. So what do you see from here? What do you see from here? That even though the pasuk says al shol val yonasan, which makes it sound like kriya must be loss specific, we see that it's not true. That even if you tear kriya with the wrong person in mind, the kriya still works. Using that logic, Rabosa, then so too when it says osa by Nidarim, maybe who says that you have to have in mind specifically for the person making the Nidarim? Maybe as long as I had in mind to be Mefer, so that's good enough as well? To which the Gemara says, no. Amri lo kashya, ha bistam v'hamam farish. The truth is the Kriya cases are two different cases. One is stam, one is a case of where you heard that there was a general loss, but you didn't hear who it was, and you tore Kriya. That Kriya works for anyone. Versus mefarish, where you were explicitly told wrong information. What does that mean? Va'atanya, we have a Bryce that supports this. Amrulo, Mes Aviv Vikara. If they told the person, your father passed away and he tore Kriya, Va'achakach Nimsa Bino, Lo Yate De Kriya. So we'll say, if the Mamash told the person, your father passed away and he tore Kriya, and then they told him, no, it wasn't your father, but it was your son, then what, Rabbi Osai? Then he has to tear Kriya again. Why? Because if you have in mind explicitly for a different person than the one that you lost, your Kriya does not work, and you do have to go back and tear Kriya again. However, again, Amrulo Mace Aviv, I'm sorry, let's de Kriya, Amrulo Mace Lo Mace, the Kasavar Aviv. But I will say, if they told the person, you know, a relative of yours passed away, and he assumed that it was his father, and then it turns out the Kara, and therefore it took Kriya, Va'achakach Nimtsabino, and then it turned out that Chas Shom it was his son, then what? Then Yotzei de Kriya. Then I will say, in that case, he was Yotzei. Why? Because since the information was general, it's true he interpreted it as being specific, but since the information was general, therefore the Kriya that was done ultimately works for any relative. Rabbi, you should know, just this, by the way, this is halacha lemaisa, that if you tear Kriya explicitly for one person, and then it turns out that that person didn't die, it was someone else, you have to tear Kriya again. But if you tore Kriya stam, meaning you got general information, even though you made an assumption that it was a particular relative, but it turned out to be someone else, you need not tear Kriya again. Therefore, I will say, linking this back to the Mishnah, now we understand the Mishnah, because what's the din of the Mishnah? The din of the Mishnah was, I was told that it was my daughter who made the nether. So I was made for her nether. Then what do I find out? That it was my wife. So in that case over there, where my hafara was explicitly for the wrong person, that is when hafara or hakama must be done again. Now, we will see by Nedarim that this analogy doesn't really hold water, because we will have seen that by Nedarim, you always actually have to have explicit intention for the person or for the neder, you are being mefer. And if there's any level of ambiguity, either by who the vower is, or for the subject matter of the neder, ultimately the neder will not, ultimately that hakama or that hafara will not work. I will say, we'll stop, but we'll pick up Emir Hashem with this Bezayin tomorrow. 2 and 3, rooms 2 and 3.